You're listening to the LifeScan Learning Lab edition of the Get Balanced podcast with Dr. Donnie and co-host Todd LaDuc, episode 69.
Welcome to the Get Balanced podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced program. Let's get started.
Hey, folks, this is Dr. Donnie, and I am telling you I'm excited that the Get Balanced podcast has an official sponsor, and I want to tell you a little bit about them. And it is FirstNet, built with the AT&T. And what I want to tell you about them is probably part of it is that many of you already know this, but for first responders and frontline workers, communication, as we know, is not a luxury, but it's a lifesaver. And that's why FirstNet, built with AT&T, was created. Now, the FirstNet mission is to make communication faster, safer, and more collaborative for first responders and other public safety personnel. FirstNet helps first responders and frontline workers connect when they are on and off duty. They get access to priority and preemption capabilities. This means they connect to the network first. In emergency situations, first responders move to the front of the line to access critical bandwidth they need to send and receive, whether it's voice, data, video, images, and text. Now, during an emergency, FirstNet is a critical connection between first responders to technology and also to each other, giving them access to information quickly and when every second counts. With FirstNet, first responders and frontline workers get a highly secure, reliable network with 24/7, 365 customer care and monitoring. Now, to get more information about FirstNet, go visit your local AT&T store or visit firstnet.com. Now, let me go in and introduce our guest for this week. All right. Welcome to another episode of the Get Balanced podcast, the LifeScan Learning Lab edition. I am Dr. Donnie and my co-host here, Todd LaDuc, Chief Todd LaDuc. And I'm going to kick it right on over to you, Todd. Introduce our guest.
Thanks, Donnie. Appreciate it. We're back for another episode. It's been just really tremendous to have so many friends and special colleagues come on and share their wealth of knowledge and talents. And we've touched on so many topics. But today I'm thrilled to have a longtime friend and colleague and really just a member of the fire service that has done so much during the course of his career. And I'm thrilled to have him on as a guest today. Was fortunate to spend a little bit of time with Chief Rich Marinucci recently at the third annual Cancer Symposium down in Orlando. And we'll touch on that a little bit, but I just wanted to say, Chief, welcome and thanks for joining us today.
Well, I appreciate the invite. Thank you very much. It was great to see you last week down at the Cancer Symposium.
Absolutely. We had a great time, a lot of information, a lot of networking for colleagues that, like most of us, haven't been able to get out much over the last 14 months. So it was good to be in person live and see a lot of just great colleagues. So Chief, I thought we'd just start by for those listeners to our podcast, asking you to share a little bit about your journey in the fire service. I know, you've served in a number of different roles and in capacities. I know where you're at today, but why don't you just, if you don't mind, take a little bit of time to share with our audience your career and how it's evolved.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very, very lucky. I've had a very, very fortunate run in the fire service. I think a lot of it's attributable to the first city manager that appointed me fire chief a long time ago. I'm actually starting my 45th year in the business. I've been fire chief in three different departments. As I said, my first department where the city manager encouraged me to get involved with various associations, and I give him all the credit for kind of kicking me out the door and letting me know that staying locked in one department at home doesn't give you all the opportunities that you need and your chance to develop. And so as a result of that, I've been engaged with a lot of different associations. I had the good fortune of serving as the president of the International Association of Fire Chiefs. From that, I actually was recruited by the U.S. Fire Administration and accepted a temporary assignment to be the chief operating officer for about 7 months. So I got a leave of absence from my fire chief job, went to Washington, D.C. and Emmitsburg, Maryland, and functioned that way. And after that, went back to being fire chief. I had a chance then to do some work with the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation and the Everyone Goes Home program. Met a lot of wonderful people along the way there. And then about 6 or 7 years ago, I was recruited to become the executive director of the Fire Department Safety Officers Association, which I am still involved with.
Yeah, you talk about, you know, having really not only seen all the different perspectives of, you know, state, local, regional, and federal, but contributed all those levels as well. So certainly a lot to be proud of, and you continue, as you point out, you can continue to be doing great work with the Fire Department Safety Officers Association. It's been phenomenal from my perspective to watch the growth of your organization and the vibrancy. And so I wondered if you could maybe talk to us a little bit about FDUSOA and what you all are up to, and what's on the radar screen there, what you all working on, what you see as the future of FDSOA. And I know you have a great group of folks that serve along with you. But again, for those that are listening, maybe that aren't familiar with the Fire Department Safety Officers Association, or even folks that are listening that may want to join, to talk about opportunities as well.
Well, very good. And thank you for the opportunity to plug the association. The safety officers' overall objective or goal, if you will, is to get safety officers together and promote the issues that are relevant to folks that will act either as a health and safety officer in their organization or an incident safety officer on the scene of an emergency. With that in mind, we try to stay in our lane and really focus on those two aspects. But we have essentially five programs that we work around. Two of them are conferences. One is the safety conference, which will be held in Scottsdale, Arizona, January 12 and 13, 2022, with some pre-conferences the couple days prior to that. We also have an apparatus conference, and that seems a little out of touch with our overall mission, but this has been going on for over 30 years, and that will be also in Scottsdale immediately prior to the safety conference. So that will be January 10 and 11. And the purpose of that is not to display apparatus, but to get together the people that are very much interested in talking about apparatus, from the manufacturers to the components, the people that provide the components for the apparatus committees, the mechanics, and anybody else that has general interest, and allow them an opportunity to build relationships, and as you said, establish networks that will help them from the purchase of apparatus all the way till it's retired. So it's a fairly unique opportunity. It's not a big show per se, in that we don't have any displays. So it's really a chance to get a little bit more intimate on the subject and talk about very specific things in a very controlled way. We have two academies, two-day training academies that we offer. One is the incident safety officer, and again, that's designed to prepare someone or actually enhance their skills when they get assigned that position on the scene of an emergency. It also prepares the people to take that for the Pro Board testing. The FDSOA is accredited by the Pro Board, and we are authorized to test for incident safety officer, health and safety officer, both based upon NFPA 1521. And we also recently added in one of our other programs, which is on roadway safety, which I'll cover briefly in just a second. But the other two-day academy is the Health and Safety Officer Academy. And that's intended for people that are assigned that function, essentially usually a staff function within a fire department that looks at managing all of the safety and health programs in a fire department and also compliance with various laws and standards such as OSHA rules and NFPA standards. So that's a two-day also prepping the student for the pro board examination. And those that successfully complete that will be certified as a health and safety officer. I did briefly mention roadway safety, and we partnered with the roadway safety folks that have great training program. And we now offer pro board certification for those that would like to be certified as a roadway safety officer.
That's fantastic. You have, you know, you talk about stay in your lane, but you know, you've got so much going on, and you know, you touched on you know, the National Fallen Firefighters and the emphasis on Everyone Goes Home, the 16 life safety initiatives, and I know you feel the same way. I mean, as a chief, as a leader, whether it's a chief or labor leader or volunteer, there really is no higher priority than taking care of our people. And that's really the work that FDSWA does, either exclusively, or I know you all have partnered. And I know being on the board of Safety, Health, and Survival section, that's been a great partnership. I remember, can't even remember how many years ago, flying into Orlando. We had some great discussions on how we could work together. And that just is, in my mind, a force multiplier that we're putting resources out there. And you mentioned some great ones. So anyone that's listening, I highly encourage. It's an excellent conference. I'm a little bit probably biased because I've been out and spoken at it a number of times. Rich has convinced me to come out in January and speak on my birthday. So I've got to bring my lovely wife with me and make a great weekend with it. But truly, it's a great conference. Industry leaders from around the country, and the folks that are the tip of the spear, the ones that are doing the work to make sure that when we say everyone goes home, that we put those principles and practice into place within our own organization. So thanks for all the work that you all are doing. And if someone wants to find out more information or even about the conference or any of the programs, what's the best way to do that, Rich?
Well, I go to our website, fdsoa.org, www.fdsoa.org. We're really going to start promoting our conferences coming up here in the next month or two. We kind of slow down a little bit in the summer because we know there's a lot of vacations and people aren't really paying too much attention. Plus, they've got competition right now between various upcoming summer conferences. But right now, we've confirmed Gordon Graham to be our keynote speaker who'll start off our conference. And we've also got Dan Madrikowski going to give us the latest updates from Underwriters Laboratories, and Denise Smith from Skidmore College will be talking about a lot of the health and safety issues and research that she's done, along with speakers such as yourself. We're pretty much buttoned down a lot of good current topics that we'll touch upon that are really, really relevant to keep people up to speed. As you know, it's a very, very changing dynamics in our business right now. You look at some of the things that we talk about, and more information is coming out all the time. And so staying up on it is critical if you're going to make a difference. I know we were at the Counselor Symposium last week, and we always talk about everybody goes home. But I think because of the long-term potential health implications of the things that are going on, we not only want them to go home, but we want them to live a long time after they retire. And I tell people, I want you to outlive the actuarial studies and try to bankrupt the pension system. You know, that's what really our goal is, to make you healthy so that you can enjoy the fruits of your labor.
Absolutely. That you know, that's a great point. Our audience that's listening, you know, they all serve their community. In your case, 45 years. And I think it's incumbent upon us within the fire service to make sure we provide the tools and resources. So not only for that time they're serving, but as you point out, post-service years, because it certainly does take a toll in many ways on the body and our physical and mental well-being. So important. I'm thrilled to hear you've got that lineup of speakers. You mentioned Dr. Denise Smith. And we've been doing some great work with her at LifeScan Wellness Centers. So thrilled to have her talent, but she's been really looking at a lot of the cardiac findings. You know, and we're blessed at LifeScan to have about 50,000 first responders a year go through our physicals. And Denise and her team at Skidmore has really taken some of that information and helped start further evolve what we can be doing to screen our members of our service to make sure that we find things before tragedy strikes. So thrilled to hear that Denise will be joining. We'll be out there exhibiting with LifeScan as well, so you can count us in as a partner. You brought it up. I wanted to see if you had what your insights were, what the takeaways from your perspective were when we both attended. I think there were right around 100 or so in person at the Cancer Symposium. I know they had a larger number. We now have, I guess, hybrid conferences, we're calling them. I always think of my golf club when I hear hybrid, but we had several hundred, I guess, attending by web in from multiple countries. I think I heard the number 9 countries were represented, but you were in person, and I was just curious, Rich. I mean, I know cancer is an issue that impacts a lot of us in the service. I've been fortunate not to have to battle cancer, but I wanted to see what your perspective was from the summit, particularly for those that weren't able to attend.
Well, we all know cancers are just horrible, horrible illnesses, and everybody in the fire service pretty much knows somebody in their organization that either before retired or shortly thereafter contracted cancer. So it really gets everybody's attention. It's something that people can relate to, whether they had it personally or whether it was someone close to them in their particular organization. I know when I do the HSO or ISO classes, I usually ask that question: how many of you know somebody that died in the line of duty because they got hit by a car on the roadway, or how many died because of falling through a roof, or whatever it may be? And you get a smattering. But when you ask that question, how many of you know somebody that died from cancer, either while they were on the job or shortly after leaving the job? And virtually every hand in the class goes up. So it touches so many people. And of course, as we do more and more research, we've got so many great people looking out for the various things that are going on, a lot of great work being done by a lot of different, really, really smart people. That was probably one of the things I took away, is there's some really smart people in the business. It really humbles me, you know, when you listen to how much they actually know. But we do know there are certain things that can be done. And so our challenge now becomes, how do you convince a relatively traditional service that they're going to have to start looking at things slightly differently? And I think it can happen, because we've done that. If you look at how fire departments approach EMS, it's so much different. I don't have to beg the firefighters to put their gloves on when they go touch a potentially bloody patient, or to wear a mask if somebody's crying. Yet we have seemed to have a little bit more of a challenge trying to get them to wear their PPE all the way through the emergency on the fire ground, even though when they don't, they unnecessarily expose themselves to a lot of carcinogens. Some of the things you talk about, you know, when you talk about decon, for example, after a fire, what you hear back from a lot of the fire people: oh, we don't have time, we're getting ready for the next call. Yet if they put a patient in the back of their ambulance that is bleeding or is contaminated, they'll take that ambulance out of service for a half hour till they totally decontaminate the inside of that vehicle. So I guess the time out of service for an EMS call is okay, but decontaminating your fire apparatus to try and protect your own folks maybe needs a little bit more work, and we need to convince people and look at it across the board that that's what we really need to do to protect our folks.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. You know, as you were saying that, just this week, I was honored to present to the Baggers group that Alan Brunicini brought together and networking. And one of the attendees, I won't put a name out there, but said, you know, it's the same things we keep hearing at this cancer symposium. It's, you know, wash your gear, PPE, get a physical. But he was right. But I think you just hit the nail on the head, right, is how well we've ingrained these in our culture. And you just hit the nail on the head that it's still a work in progress. You know, I know the IFC on physicals back in 2016 did a survey and still 20% of paid departments weren't providing physicals. I think it was 40% of volunteers. So still have a lot of work to do. I mean, it's obviously culture is changing, but, you know, it's putting into practice, translating what we know into practice. And sometimes for the fire service, like any big behemoth, that can be a challenge and it takes time. So great insights. I appreciate you sharing those. And, you know, this, I'm going to toss this one at you, and I apologize because I didn't tell you ahead of time, but those are usually the best type, I think. But I think, you know, you've had such a long career and you've been at so many different levels. I mean, you touched on, you know, being local fire chief in several different departments. You touched on your time as IFC president, your time as acting role at U.S. Fire Administration in NFFF, and now you're, you know, executive director of a large association. What do you see, Rich, looking forward as some of the maybe the larger issues facing the American Fire Service, looking to the future? And you know, I think for me, it'd be remiss not to ask you that from all the vantage points that you've had during your career.
Well, it's always a good question to ask, and where you're going. I think, you know, you start talking about where we're at and everything else. One of the challenges, I think, is getting more of the younger generation involved in the state and national programs and trying to make sure that they're all covered. When we go to various meetings, we often see the same old faces, and so I think one of the challenges is making sure that we create a mentoring program that allows more people to be involved. And the only reason I got involved, as I said, is I was pushed into it by a boss who said it was a good idea. And so we need fire chiefs to push some of their subordinates into this thing to carry on and make that transition as we go forward. Within the service, you know, so many of the challenges are based upon, I think, staffing issues. We see a lot of departments that don't have adequate staffing, and it's a financial issue in most cases. But we're also seeing some parts of the country not as many people interested in the service. We're probably, when you joined and when I joined, an open position would literally generate hundreds, if not thousands, of applications for positions. And now we don't see that same number to select from. Doesn't mean that the people that ultimately get hired aren't worthy, but it should be of some concern when you can't get enough applications to fill available slots, especially when you're starting off a little bit understaffed as it goes. And when you have these vacancies, it certainly makes it more challenging. Another issue that comes up that I think needs to be addressed is the expansion of our services. So if we are going to be really good at what we want, what we're supposed to do, and which is what the expectation is. I mean, when someone calls the fire department, they don't want a bunch of dummies to show up. They want people that can fix their problem. And so when you keep adding responsibilities in order to stay current, it becomes more challenging to find the training and education time so that you are on top of it. For example, we know in our industry that when we go to a fire, we're working in a building that we may or may not be familiar with. But one of the ways to make better decisions is to understand building construction. Yet so many times you find that people go to building instruction when they're in recruit school and maybe don't ever revisit that particular topic until they get assigned to a fire investigation or maybe a fire prevention or something along the lines. And yet this is our work environment, so we should know as much as possible. Well, we also know that building construction has changed dramatically in the last 5 to 10 years and so forth. So if you haven't been keeping up on it, so one of the challenges to our service is how do you find the time to touch on all these very, very important topics if you really want to be good at this particular job?
No, that's some fantastic insight. I mean, for those that are listening, we all have an obligation mentoring and leaving the service in great hands coming up. I know we were all, you know, you mentioned your city manager. We've all had mentors along the way. And two other things you said just really resonate: lifelong learning, being a continuing student of the service. The day we stop learning, I think, is, you know, we put ourselves and others in peril. And then staffing is, you know, whether that's recruitment or retention, you know, being mindful that 70% of our service is volunteer, and we continue to see those challenges. So some great points for those that are listening, some great wisdom from a leader in the fire service for almost half a century. You know, I'm more on a personal level, Rich. I wanted to, at least from my perspective, end my things I wanted to chat with you about, and I know Donnie's going to love this one. But you told me what I thought was just a fantastic story about you, your wife, your community recently with, you know, we've all just struggled, some more than others, no doubt, with the pandemic over the last 13 or 14, however many months. So our lives were in many cases turned upside down, and you know, certainly for those that were in school, and that became a whole nother challenge. But you and your wife really stepped up to the plate with a great opportunity to fill a void for a lot of high school folks in your community. And I wonder if you could just share a little bit about that.
Well, my kids, and I have a ninth grader and 11th grader. Well, now they're going into 10th and 12th. So in the past year, there's been a lot of challenges for the schools. We're kind of fortunate our kids went to school in person almost the entire time, but there were so many different restrictions and I don't know if cheated is the right word, but a lot of these school kids didn't have the same opportunities that every other year did. And so the school that my kids go to is not especially large, so they would have a combined junior and senior prom. And this year, because of social distancing and not wanting to overcrowd and restrictions put on by our state of how many people could gather, they said only the seniors would be invited to the prom, which means that the juniors would be shut out. So my wife was with some other mothers of junior girls and said, what can we do to help this out? And my wife offered our house. And so we hosted the junior prom in our backyard. We got a couple big tents in the back. DJ played some music for, you know, 3 or 4 hours. The neighbors were really good about it and very tolerant. And, you know, they had a pretty fun time. And so they got a chance to experience it. So they could get dressed up as you do for a prom. But it was kind of a little bit different in our backyard. We have a little pond out back. One kid showed up with fishing poles and actually was in his tuxedo fishing and for a short period of time. But we tried to make it a fun event for the kids. And by all accounts, they had a really good time. And there were no events and nothing went wrong. So knock on wood, we got lucky. Kids had a good time. So, you know, my wife did, you know, she was responsible for it. I was just along for the ride.
That is a great story. Yeah. Boy, I bet that'd be a prom that those kids will never forget. That's for sure.
Yeah, we hope so. You know, they had so many disadvantages in the last year of what they couldn't do. And, you know, you think about, it was a long time ago for me in high school, but all of us, the opportunities we had that were basically got canceled in the last 18 months. And so any little thing like that, I think helps us restore some normalcy.
Yes. Yeah. I have four children, but two daughters are in the home and they were juniors and seniors this year. And it was really nice because they went to the prom together, having both of them. So getting the picture with them all dressed up and everything like that is really nice. And it's a good time for kids that age. That's for sure. Yeah. Hey, Rich, while I have you on, and now Todd, I appreciate you giving me a minute on this, is that when you think about, as he mentioned, I talk a lot about work-life balance in my podcast, but when I talk about work-life balance, it's different, I think, than sometimes people just think of the words as work-life balance. Because for me, in my research, it's all about what are our priorities in life and are our daily behaviors in alignment with those priorities? And I say, if you're, and when you talked about how in the whole initiative, and it's, everyone goes home, which I love that phrase, right? Everyone goes home. But when we go home as firefighters, and that's where I try to place that emphasis, is that let's not, it takes a lot of energy also to make that, to help that home life be successful and effective for everyone. And just want to get your thoughts on a little bit about how did you manage priorities and how do you help other firefighters when it comes to, maybe you've seen someone to where you feel like their home life is sort of spiraling downward and things like that. Did you ever get a chance to mentor someone in that capacity to help them shore up things back at home?
Well, I'm not sure I'm the person to necessarily talk about this. I'm very, very fortunate. My wife is active in the fire service as a manager. She manages some associations. She does a lot of work with me on the FTSOA and a couple of organizations here in the state of Michigan. And so I think we have that connection from that perspective. So there's a little bit more understanding of what goes into some of the responses, what's happening while you're on the job. So I think I'm luckier than most from that perspective. So how you find that particular balance and how you go, I know there's a lot of folks in the fire business that I grew up with is, it's a 24/7 kind of deal, especially as you get up higher in the ranks, you get called at all hours and could go out at any particular time. So it really is challenging and you have to enjoy what you're doing, but you also have to have a time where you kind of step back and maybe take a break for a short period of time, just to kind of reset.
Yeah. 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 Well, I appreciate your thoughts on that. Yeah. Todd.
Yeah, I know, Rick, I think Donnie's heard me say this before, and I'm sure Rich would agree. I think it was Jim Page, the late Jim Page, who I heard at, I think it was one of the GEMS conferences many, many years ago, say, and I'm sure Rich, you see the same thing over your career, a lot of chiefs, Jim Page would say he knew that were professionally successful. A lot of chiefs he knew were personally successful. But very few, he pointed out, were both. And I think, that's a great, just a great point that Donnie touched on is as we go through our career, particularly for those that are listening that are just starting out, the importance of finding that sweet spot is obviously we have a passion for the job, but we also have to take care of ourselves and our families and our network of friends and make sure that, we have what we need to be effective at the job. So great points. Sometimes we get lost, or in Rich's case, he's got a tremendous support network. I know his wife and he's blessed. So something we all need to keep a mind on. So I want to, Rich, I'm thrilled that you were able to take time to come on. I'm privileged to call you a friend and look forward to continue working with you. I want to be mindful of your time. I'm sure we'll look to have you back on. I'm sure Donnie will be looking to pick your brain and maybe have you on his podcast as well. But I want to say thank you for your insights and sharing your career and the work that not only you have done but continue to do. It's made a tremendous impact on the fire service, and thank you for all you do and being who you are.
Well, thank you. Obviously, enjoy the fire service a great deal, and so any chance I get to chat a little bit, it's always fun. So I do appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely, and I'll look to see you soon, and stay safe. Tell everyone we said hi, and we'll have this spooled up and out probably in the not-too-distant future. So thanks again for your insights, and look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you very much again.
Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balanced program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.